What is going on, y'all? And thank you again so very much for taking time out of your busy day or your late evening or your early mornings to spend it here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, the man, the world, well, I wouldn't say the world because he's not allowed out of the United States, but the national traveler, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios.
For now.
What do you mean I can't leave the United States?
What you know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't. Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Everybody else does. Quick Google search.
I've been out of
Big Fizzy.
I've been out of the United States multiple times. I've been to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, how recent was it?
Oh, yeah. It's
exactly. It was after the crime. So anyway, we're going to move forward.
I like how you're putting this out here. People are going to be like, what crime?
What crime? Nothing. Here was the crime that Kyle would have committed. He may have left his house earlier than normal. Kyle doesn't. He's like, we don't go anywhere.
I don't.
But we did just get back from Florida.
Oh, yeah, man. It was a good trip.
It was
probably the best one we've had yet.
It was so much fun. Folks, for those of you that kept up on Instagram, you already know it. We went down to Florida and hung out with the boys from Ninjas or Butterflies.
That's right.
We had Andrew, Andy, Hooper. We were all down there. We got to go hang out. They took us. We got to go eat some good food. We did a show. We got to go fish. Went to a big family gathering with them and fished. Hung out. It was great. Did a full tour of Sunday Cool. Got to see an insane shirt-making company.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, that was a bit overwhelming. But we love mechanical stuff, so we got caught up looking at all of that kind of things.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's pretty much where we've been. So, if you're hearing this, on September 11th, folks, our episode is dropping with Ninjas. So hop on there to YouTube. You can pull it up. You'll be able to watch it. Of course, the audio will be out as well. And then because of that trip, go ahead and tell you, Kyle and I was sitting down there. We stayed on the lake.
Yeah. Lake Dora. Dora, yeah.
Full of alligators. It was awesome. And seaplanes. Watching seaplanes fly and land in front of you. Kyle was acting like he was 9 again. Y'all know when he gets all geeked up about airplanes. He was losing his mind.
I've never seen seaplanes landing and taking off before.
Now you've seen about 30 of them. And trust me, when I say seen them, like I'm sitting over under this awning, hanging out, right? Everything's good. Kyle's at the end of the dock, under the shade, alone, just watching planes like he was. Now, he wasn't kicking his feet in the water because there's alligators in there, right? There's dinosaurs. But if there were no dinosaurs, he would have been ecstatic on the whole trip.
Dude, I told you.
Anything but watch flying.
My whole life, I've wanted to have a pilot's license, and I'm going to make it happen.
I think you should. I think you should.
I want a helicopter, though, so we can hunt out of it.
Now you're talking. I don't need to know how to fly. I need Kyle to know how to fly.
Right.
I'm just going to hold on to the side, clip into the side on my rope, and rain down hell from above
with your AR
on swine.
And FRTs.
Yeah, I'm done with the swine. But because of this trip, and because of him and I sitting up there and talking, and because of Andrew and the boys and everybody coming at us, everybody's pretty much been at it, we've decided it's time. We're going full time with the video. So we've dabbled in the past, and y'all know, and it's been a few years since we posted on YouTube. We've also got, we were in the midst, you know, of updating the studio that we're in now. We're like, well, we could do that. Well, then we kind of stumbled into another studio. So now we stopped working in the home studio. We have another studio that we're actually getting set up, but we're going to start filming in the home studio first.
Yeah.
And then we're going to take it to the next one. So
we've just been
lazy.
We were sitting there and they were like, you need to do this. They're like, oh yeah, we got the cameras. They're like, you do. I was like, oh yeah. And we got the lenses for
we
them.
Got all the stuff to
we
do
got
it.
The lights. They're like, so why aren't you doing it? I'm like, I don't know. We're lazy.
Yeah. We enjoy doing the podcast. And the problem is, and we'll apologize to everybody right now that loves YouTube. We should have listened. We should have done it sooner. But we're old. We're hard-headed. You can't teach old dog new tricks.
You get caught in a routine.
You can.
You get caught
That's
in
what
routine.
It is. Yeah. So, because of all that, hopefully within the next week or so, you're going to start seeing our ugly mugs on YouTube. What else we're shooting for, what we're going to try to do, is to get it on Spotify.
Yep.
Have our videos on Spotify. And all the videos will be on Patreon. We're also going to do the elite shows. So all you elitists will have elite show videos that you'll be able to do. And then we'll start growing it from there and see where it goes. But so that's kind of the long and the short of what we've got going down right now, what we're working on. So the show, it's not really going to change. It's just going to be us. So you're going to get to see us. Now, look, don't be overly critical. I mean, we do spend our time indoors. We're old men. We're like just two old trolls waiting to talk on the microphone. So
I spent yesterday outside. I had to walk to my deer stand. Oh, I was going to replace the battery in the feeder to get that going. Turns out the battery's fine. It's
was
the
you
motor.
Afraid your catalytic converter is going to start a grass fire out there? So you had to park up in the bare spot by the old house and walk in?
Man, I'm telling you. It was hot.
It's terrible. Yeah. You said you saw a bobcat.
I did. I jumped a bobcat.
Mm-hmm. I bet he was hot.
Yeah.
He's panning.
I was like, what is that doing out here at 3 p.m? I was like, it's got to be
thirsty.
You
just leave the door open. You're like, bro, you can hop in and get some cool air while I'm gone. Don't tear up the seats. Feel free, right? Mr. Kitty. Feel free. Enough about that, y'all. You know what's coming. We know everything that's going down. We'll touch on it. Here's something that you didn't know was coming. And I don't think Mr. Filson was aware of this either. Lon sent me this, folks.
Okay.
This takes place in southern Louisiana. A couple deer hunters. Says this happened to me and a friend of mine from out of town whom I'd invited to go hunting one afternoon. Now, this is how it always goes.
Right.
You're going to invite your buddy. If you're ever the buddy that gets invited, we've covered those stories, right? You take somebody hunting, something crazy goes down. Says we're in southern Louisiana, in an area with thick woods and palmettos that reach approximately 6 feet in height in some places. The water we had to cross to reach my deer stands was up to our waists at times. Now, I'm pretty sure there's alligators in there, too. Traveling the mile to the stands was slow and difficult. My friend was not accustomed to that kind of terrain, but he kept up. Now, when we had reached the first deer stand, which was about 15 foot off the ground and accessible by a ladder, my buddy climbed up into it. I told him I'd return for him in about a half an hour after dark because my stand was about another half mile past this one.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a full moon reflecting off the water, allowing us to hunt a few minutes longer. That's not how that works. So when it became too dark, I mean, unless you're hunting pigs, if you're hunting anything else, like, that's not how that works.
There's a limit.
Oh, there's bright moonlight. I can hunt under it. No. I mean, you can, but there's consequences. So when it became too dark to see, I climbed down from my stand, placed my rifle over my shoulder, and began walking back toward my friend. When I was nearly at his stand, I was shining my light upward, but he wasn't there.
Uh-oh.
Yup. So then I directed.
They got him.
Something got him. So then I directed the light towards the ground, saw him leaning against the tree beneath the stand. Tears streaming. No, I'm kidding. There's no tears. He's underneath the stand. That's me talking about Kyle. So what struck, or me with the pigs, what struck me as odd was that he couldn't even look in my direction. Even after I called his name, I walked to within a couple of foot of him and asked if he was ready to leave. He finally turned his head and looked at me. And what I saw frightened me so badly that I removed the rifle from my shoulder and held it between us. His eyes appeared to be rolled back. His mouth was hanging wide open. He stared at me without speaking or responding to my questions. At that moment, he looked as if he was possessed. Nothing like your best friend holding a loaded rifle on you, and all you're doing is having an epileptic seizure.
Yeah, you're having a stroke. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, you're epileptic. You didn't tell him, and now he's like, he's possessed. You just killed your buddy. I was scared, so I finally slapped him across the face, and he suddenly snapped back to himself. When I asked whether he was all right, the only thing he said was, "Let's get out of here now."
Maybe he was like, what do they call it, warging, where he's like, look, he's looking through an owl's eyes, trying to find game.
He's looking through it like an owl hunting. He's a warg. I didn't understand what was happening, so I made him walk in front of me for the entire trip back to the truck.
With your gun on him.
Yeah, right, like keep strolling. We got inside and left without saying anything at first. And when I finally asked him what had happened in the woods and why he had looked so shocked, he began crying. He said, "I missed a deer." No, that's
man,
Kyle.
It was a record buck, yeah, man.
Shot over it. He told me that while sitting in the stand, he heard something walking through the water and pushing against the palmettos. When it came close enough for him to see it, he said that it was a man who looked as though he had been skinned alive.
Flayed?
Uh-huh. According to him, the figure had no skin anywhere on its body. He said he became so frightened. After the figure passed his position, he climbed down and hid against the tree beneath the stand. He was afraid it might return and see him. He was still in shock and fear when I found him. That's why he looked the way he did and remained so shaken and cried so much that I eventually had to pull over, or he pulled over, so I could drive.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately a week later, I spoke with my cousins, who had toured a nearby Native American memorial. My cousin claimed that the tour included a story about members of a local tribe skinning men alive mm-hmm. and releasing them into the woods as punishment for serious crimes. My friend was not from the area, so had no way of knowing that this story before his encounter. What did he see that frightened him so badly? Was it a ghost of someone who had been skinned alive years ago?
Absolutely.
I don't know, but I only know that I will never forget the condition my friend was in when I found him beneath that tree stand.
You know, this is the second time you've told a flayed man story. I remember you told one on Ducks Unlimited mm-hmm. one time. Mm-hmm. It was a similar account. The person wasn't possessed or anything, but it was like they were seeing
the ghost of
something that happened in that swamp or wherever. Man, that's...
Look, flayed, that is extremely terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
A flayed dude just walking around in the woods, the ghost of it. I'm out.
You've skinned lots of animals. Yeah. Can you imagine yourself being skinned?
No, absolutely. Especially alive, right? Could you imagine? No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Check this one out. It says, "Hi, guys. My name is Kurt. First off, I love your stuff. The show is always amusing and informative."
Thanks.
"And honestly, if I didn't trust you guys, I probably wouldn't be sending this your way. This happened to me one night when I woke up in the middle of what I initially thought was a nightmare. I was lying flat on my back. My arms were crossed over my chest at the wrists, and my right hand touching my left shoulder and my left hand touching my right shoulder." He sleeps like Nosferatu.
That's pretty comfortable. I fall asleep like that. I'm not going to lie. My wife and daughter and kids, they've all given me a hard time because when I fall asleep flat on my back, mm-hmm. hands on my sternum, just crossed, where it looks like I'm laying in a coffin. That's normally how
I... Are you a vampire?
I guess I'm a vampire. I don't know. And my daughter's like, "There's something wrong with you. Nobody goes to sleep like that." And here I am just
laying there like on my side.
You turn your back to your wife?
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured that's about the kind of guy you are.
The fan's on my left.
Yeah, right.
He says, "My legs were crossed at the ankles, and I want to make something very clear. I never sleep like this." So he's not like Cam, just like no one else is.
Yeah, no joke. Any of y'all ever seen if you ever run into my wife or daughter, you can straight up ask, and they're going to tell you he sleeps very weird.
He says, "I normally sleep on my right side with my knees drawn up. Now, I already know what you're probably going to say to this. The old hag, or sleep paralysis. But I think you'll see why this felt very different. When I woke up, I was having trouble breathing. Serious trouble. And I wasn't alone. There was a woman on my left. She was attractive, with dark hair. She was down on her knees beside me. I sleep on a very thick futon directly on the floor." Right, he's Japanese, I guess. "So she was basically kneeling right next to where I was lying. She was talking to me, trying to wake me up. She kept telling me to breathe. Just breathe. Just breathe." Isn't that like a Faith Hill song?
Go.
"But there was someone else in the room. On my right was a man also with dark hair. And this guy did not like me. I had this overwhelming feeling that there had already been some kind of physical struggle between us. Like I had fought back somehow. And he had been on the receiving end of it. He was talking to the woman. And he was telling her, just let me die. He seemed angry with me, like I had hurt him in some way. The woman kept telling him to shut up and to stay out of the way. Then she'd turn her attention back to me, trying to get me to breathe, trying to keep me alive. So I must not have been completely paralyzed, at least not at first, but my arms were still pinned across my chest, and my legs felt crossed and locked together. As the woman continued talking to me, I somehow managed to roll my shoulders. That movement finally allowed me to pull in one deep breath. Then my arms came apart. I started to sit up, and suddenly, I was alone. Both of them were gone. Now, I know how this sounds, but it did not feel like a dream. There was a definite sense that something had physically happened in that room. The air even seemed different. There was this strange, heavy smell, almost like ozone. I knew someone had been there. My wrist hurt in the exact spot where I felt like someone had grabbed me. My right hand was throbbing across the knuckles, too. The same dull ache after you hit something. Nothing in the room appeared to have been moved, but physically, I felt like I had just been through something. And I could still hear that woman's voice in my head, pleading with me to regain consciousness, pleading with me not to die. Nice of her, I thought. Eventually, I got up. My legs were still a little sore, and I turned on the light. It was around 1:45 in the morning. I didn't sleep again that night. There was no chance. My body was still dumping so much adrenaline that my hands were shaking. I just sat there wide awake, trying to understand what had happened. And I stayed awake until morning. That's my story. I figured if anyone might have an idea what this was or where I should even begin looking for answers, it would be you guys. One other detail that may or may not matter, I've since moved to a different address. Nothing like this has ever happened before that night, and nothing has happened since that night. It was just a one-time deal. Now, I know all this sounds a little cryptic. I've never actually written the story out before, so everything is kind of coming out at once. But please don't dismiss this as just a dream. I don't drink, I don't do drugs, and whatever happened that night, I know that I experienced it. Anyway, keep up the great work with the show. I always enjoy the sweet and sour combination of humor and suspense that you guys somehow managed to hammer together so well. Wishing you all the best, Kurt.
Kurt, thanks so much for the kind words. We don't know what we're doing. And second of all, that was no dream, bro. You're looking in the on the other side of the veil.
Right.
That's what it seems like.
I mean,
like,
his hands throbbing.
You know what it makes me think of?
What?
Maybe she's a guardian angel. The other one maybe was not. The other one's there to escort you to wherever you're going.
Yeah.
And the guardian angel's like, no, this isn't his time. Like, you did something to the other guy, right? And you messed this up. I'm going to fix it. And then everything's going to be good. That's why I was telling him, like, she was like, get out of here. Just go. I'll take care of it.
Yeah.
Right. Is working on it. It's like, you may have legitimately just kind of got to peer into, I guess, when guardian angels make a mistake or something else makes a mistake, and the guardian angel has to show up and be like, look, let me fix it.
Yeah, it makes
again.
You wonder, because he was having trouble breathing and stuff. Like, maybe he was like almost having a heart attack in the bed. And
yeah.
He was like you're saying, he was almost on his way to heaven or
and
hell.
She slung and in like, and was like, no,
it's not your time.
It's not your time. Something happened. This jackass at the end of the bed did something. I'll take care of him later. We got to get you fixed first. Because that's what it seems like. Because you don't hear many stories like this.
No.
Right? It's usually always something bad on the other side. You don't ever hear of like one going, I'm going to just go ahead and triage. Right? I'm combat medicing this guy. And that's what we're going to get. And then nothing happened since. Woke up sore, but nothing's happened.
Adrenaline.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he clearly went through something.
Unless it was an abduction.
Well, yeah.
I don't want to wish that evil on anybody. But, I mean, it could easily have been something along that lines. And that's what you've been imprinted memory with of what's going on. Which, you know, who knows either way. But I'm glad nothing else has happened. Everything's good. You moved. You know, you didn't leave a forwarding address. They can't find you that way. You just slide away from it. Let them have to go about their own way. They'll have to do some Google searching before they end up finding you now. You're good to go, Kurt. Good Lord, that's scary. I've got you one here. This took place in 1977.
Ooh.
Right? Love it.
It's 1 year old.
Now, I would love to be able to pronounce the name of this thing, this town in Vermont.
Okay, right? give it a whirl.
Oh, we don't need no fancy words.
Yeah, we kind of do here. This is, says, I am forever, this FP sent, says, I am forever haunted by this experience. It happened in April of 1977. Two other young guys and I were being held at a juvenile detention center in Virginis, Vermont?
Sure.
I don't know. It sounds good. It looks, it's wild. Who knows? Vermont's a beautiful place, too.
I'd like to go. I've never been.
My daughter, when she was up there, sending me pictures, videos. I mean, brought back all kinds of like maple syrup, all kinds of good stuff, man. It was great.
Give it 4 or 5 weeks from now. I bet it's amazing in the fall with the trees and all that.
Oh, yeah. Now, in the deep of the winter, I'm not interested in all that cold.
No. Not the deep, but just fall. I mean, I'm excited because, dude. College football's back.
Here he goes. Can I finish my story, Mr. Excited About the Fall?
Yeah, go ahead.
The facility was far out in the country, and we had to make plans to escape that day.
Hate.
I love the idea of three young dudes like, we got to get out of here. And in the 70s, if you basically broke out, who's going to call you in? Ain't no car phones. Ain't no video game. You're just sprinting around in the woods, right? We requested passes to walk across the campus to the infirmary. Once we were outside, we ran through the apple fields, followed the creek, and headed north. At one point, a bull chased us onto a fallen tree that actually extended out over the water. We eventually got away from the bull and continued running for what seemed like hours. It was a heart-pounding ordeal. We were drenched in sweat as we pushed through the brush, open fields, and the lightly wooded area. By then, we were exhausted and running sloppily. Suddenly, we heard something above us that sounded like a helicopter. We ran beneath a tree to hide, and a large shadow passed directly over us. When we looked up, we saw a giant creature land on a thick branch. Now, at first, we could only see its back. It resembled a person's back, but it was heavily muscled, almost like the back of a bodybuilder. The creature also had long legs. I estimated that it stood approximately 5 to 6 feet tall. Now, we're still trying to understand what we're seeing when its head turned completely backwards. Huge, round, orange-red eyes stared down at us. They appeared to glow and seemed hypnotic. All three of us were just frozen in fear. The creature looked at us as though we were prey. It suddenly seemed to study the group, searching for the weakest person. Without warning, this is so great, the branch broke beneath the creature's weight. Its claws remained locked around the wood as its enormous wings unfolded. The wind produced by those wings was extremely powerful. The creature lifted the broken branch over us and then dropped it directly in front of us. It turned its body while hovering above our position. I yelled, grabbed a branch, and began waving it while making as much noise as possible. The creature appeared bewildered by my reaction. It then turned away and glided off, making hardly any sound. I believe it initially thought we were injured prey. It may have hunted other animals in a similar manner, but I also believe it dropped the branch to try to scatter us. The creature had horn-like projections similar to ear tufts of a horned owl. Its body was brown, the underside was grayish and speckled. It had enormous claws, and it looked powerful enough to grab a person, along with a massive beak. Its wingspan appeared to be approximately 10 feet. My native people's owl legends refer to beings called Big Hoots. That's your new nickname. 1001. Joining me today on the podcast is Big Hoots. I have also wondered whether this creature was something similar to what other people call the Mothman. One of the other boys, Jim, was deeply disturbed after the encounter. He turned himself into the authorities, and a few months later, he took his own life. I believe that if we had not hidden from what we initially thought was a helicopter, the creature might have taken Jim. He was the weakest of the three of us and had been lagging behind. When the creature stared at us through those large orange-red eyes, it seemed especially focused on him. I've been telling this story for more than 40 years. Most people think I'm crazy when I describe an owl-like creature with a 10-foot wingspan. But trust me, it was real, and this experience has never left me.
Wow.
A giant owl Mothman tracked a bunch of runaways in 1977. Folks, if you liked those, we're going to take a quick one. Y'all know what goes down. Quick break, come right back. And more creepiness. You know what you're listening to? Yep, Expanded Perspectives. We'll see you on the break.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish. Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Back again.
Can you even imagine seeing a giant owl-like creature? Like, I can't even... Like, how would the rest of your life just be normal? You'd be like...
It would never be. Like, I mean, it would never... You could never get over these animal sightings that... I'm not going to say one's worse than the other. Like, an unknown animal's going to creep you out more than a known animal and all that. But if to ease your toe, to dabble into these crazy sightings... It's one thing if it's so far-fetched. If you saw like a giant flying octopus and all this stuff went down, you'd just be like, this is some kind of crazy Cthulhu mythos and I'm totally out of my mind for it, right?
Yeah, something's definitely wrong.
But when you see something that you're like, that's a normal animal, but why is the owl 8 foot tall or whatever it is, right? Like, why do these things get huge? That is one of those deals that you're, it shakes you in both ways. And especially if you already know, like, yeah, there's no way that animal's supposed to even exist.
Well, and it wasn't a solo sighting.
Exactly.
There was people with you.
Three of you, and one of you ends up not being able to really deal with it at all. So, yeah, that's insane.
Speaking of insane animals, check this one out.
Oh, great.
It says, hey, guys, I'm a new listener, but
hey.
I already love the show.
Thanks, and welcome.
I've been going back through some of the older episodes, and I heard you talking about something you called a not deer. That stopped me cold, because... I've seen one.
Ooh.
Or at least I've seen something that looked enough like a deer to fool me at first. I was about 15 years old at the time, hunting with my dad in the Hells Canyon area of North Idaho, not too far from where we lived. By then, I'd already been bow hunting with him for about 5 years. I grew up around the woods. I knew what deer looked like. I know how they moved. I knew what sick animals looked like, too. That year, my dad decided I was finally old enough to hunt with a rifle. So one morning before sunrise, we headed out to his tree stand. We got there early, and then we waited. And we waited some more, for hours. The woods were quiet. Too quiet, looking back on it. No real movement. No animals passing through. Nothing worth getting excited about. Then, about 50 yards away, a buck, a nice one, slowly poked its head out into a clearing. This thing was beautiful. An 8-point buck. The kind of deer you remember. I raised my rifle and settled the scope on it, waiting for it to step out just a little farther into the open. At first, everything looked normal. Then it moved, and something felt wrong. I couldn't explain it. The motion was just off. I kept watching through my scope. As more of the deer came into view, I noticed something strange around the front shoulder. The fur didn't look right. The shape underneath it didn't look right either. I lowered the rifle and whispered to my dad that maybe we shouldn't shoot this one. I told him it might be sick. Diseased, maybe. Something wasn't right. My dad looked at me with a weird face and brought up his binoculars and looked himself. He stayed quiet for a few seconds. Then under his breath, he said, "What the..." That scared me more than the deer did. My dad didn't swear. Not really. Maybe while watching sports. Yeah, sure. But not like that. Not out there. Not in that tone, either. I raised my rifle again and looked through the scope. By then, the buck had stepped fully into the clearing. And I could see it. I mean, I could really see it. The front legs weren't legs. They were arms. Human-looking arms. Thick. Muscular. They bent like arms. They looked like they belonged to some huge, muscular man wearing a deer costume. Except there were no hands. at the end of those arms. There were hooves. I remember staring at it, trying to make my brain understand what I was even looking at. It had the head of a deer, the body of a deer, but those front limbs, they were wrong, completely wrong. I asked my dad, "What should we do?" He just kept staring at it. Then he said, "I have no idea." After a second, he told me to fire the rifle into the air. He wanted me to scare it away. He didn't want me shooting it directly because, as impossible as it sounded, he was worried it could somehow be a person. I remember asking him, why would a person dress up like a deer in the middle of the woods during deer season? My dad said, "People are stupid." I think he was trying to keep me calm because he could tell I was about 2 seconds away from losing it. So I followed his instructions. I pointed the rifle away up in the air and fired. The sound cracked through the woods and the thing took off. We watched it disappear into the trees. Afterward, we climbed down from the stand and walked over to the clearing. We wanted to see where it had gone. The ground was soft because it had rained a few days earlier. Soft enough that our own footprints showed clearly. You could see exactly where we stepped, but where the deer had been, there was nothing. No hoof prints, no tracks, no disturbed dirt, nothing. It was as if it was never there. My dad was a good tracker. He knew how to read the ground. He searched the area carefully. So did I. We found no sign of anything that had been standing there. No tracks leading in, no tracks leading out. It was like the thing had never actually touched the ground. That was enough for both of us. We packed up and headed back to the truck. We didn't talk much on the way. And strangely enough, we never really talked about it afterward either. We just sort of buried it. Brushed it off as some strange thing we saw in the woods one time. Something neither one of us could explain. We continued hunting the same area for several more years. And we never saw anything like it again. Not once. But after hearing you guys talk about the not deer, I realized something. Maybe what we saw wasn't just some strange animal, and maybe we weren't the only ones to have seen one. AG. So what do you think of that?
We've got several. And we had a story not long ago like that, where it was like two hunters had seen one that they weren't sure what exactly it was with the non-deer.
Well, and I get their point too. Like, don't shoot it. Maybe it is a psychotic person dressing up, trying to play a prank or something.
Just shoot it.
What?
Just shoot it.
That's what you would do?
Dude, if I saw something that looked all creepy like that and you were armed up and I'm already deer hunting, the onus isn't on me.
That's
I'm
true.
Like, there's a deer. Yeah. It come
you got
out.
In trouble. You'd be like, hey, it's not my fault the guy was dressed
you
up like a deer.
You wouldn't have shot him. He's a good buck. They says an 8. I mean, I don't know. What's it score? Like in the 130s? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Now, if you're talking about 150 plus inch 8-point, that's a once in a lifetime deer. Like everybody that hunts would love to have a 150 or bigger 8-point.
People may not know what ridiculous. You're even talking about.
4 points on either side. An antler with four
points
on either
side. No, I'm saying like the score you're giving
all the score, yeah. That's too much to go into. If you want to understand how to score white-tailed deer and you're not really, you don't have any idea, search up Boone and Crockett for, that's gun hunters. Go into that record book. Pope and Young. And I've talked about Pope and Young. Dr. Saxton Pope and Art Young in the past when it, with Ishii and all that. We've talked about those. That's where the scoring comes in with that. So it's just a way to everybody, you know.
Yeah.
It's for the record books, but it ended up turning into how people score them when they look at them, and they do it for, you know, just to try to make the deer better and healthy and things along those lines if you want to grow them. It's age, genetics. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it.
Man, these cans are fantastic.
Right? All you got to do is change the ear cups out on them. We're all excited, folks. Real quick, I changed the ear cups out on our headphones. I hadn't changed the ear cups out on these headphones for
a decade,
probably close to 10 years. So you can imagine what they look like. And every time we record, we were going to do it. I'm talking like the stuff was hanging off of them.
Oh, I'd find black stuff in my ears like hours later. I'm like, what is this?
So literally for less than $20, I went ahead and changed them out after 10 years. We'll see if these hold up another 10. If so,
hey shout out to Sony, though, because I mean, these cans have been, we've used them every episode for over a decade.
You've only got the newest pair. Because you ran over a pair with your chair and the old one and like jacked up the wires in it or something. And then that was it. The rest of them, we had Sennheisers to start and now those. So AG sent in all of this stuff with the not deer, which is awesome. AG, I got one for you. This one's specifically for you. You ask, You brought it up. Sean sends this in. Sean says, here in Sleepy Hollow, New York, we have all types of crazy things. The Headless Horseman's not one of them. We have ghosts, and demons, and aliens. And every summer you see ghost hunters here, but never in the winter, until last year. Now, we're playing paintball during the winter. They were 10 players in our group. We played for an hour before we ran out of paintballs and retreated to the rock bridge, where we built a fire as we usually did. My brother George and I heard something to our right. There were leaves on the trees, snow covered the ground, and the moon was bright enough to illuminate a deer.
I bet those paintballs hurt when it's cold out like that.
You remember when we used to play, when they would be hard? They would sting. You get hit in the hands or anything. You're like, yeah. God. Cold paintballs whipping at you at probably roughly 280 to 300 feet per second. Yeah. It was not a normal looking deer. It had no tail, and its eyes were too far apart. It also had an awful stench like death. I told my brother not to make a sound. George is not one for ghosts and does not believe in fairy tales. But when he saw this thing, he was beside himself. Before we could turn around, it saw us and it screamed at us. The rest of the crew heard it and wondered why we were freaking out. We ran past them yelling, "Let's go! Let's go now!" When they saw what we had seen, they took off with us. This thing was extremely fast. The exit was a good mile away along the Aqueduct Trail. It took us approximately 10 minutes to get back to the road. Now, as we got close, we could see a light on the road. The thing was directly behind us, still screaming. When we reached the light, it stopped. It stood there looking at us and continued to scream. What do you think about that so far?
Terrifying,
right? This thing is chasing them. It's on them and screaming. One of the neighbors came outside cussing at us because of all the noise. She said she had called the police. Then she saw what we saw, and she ran back inside screaming herself. As the police arrived, this thing took off. My brother and I had taken pictures of it, and we got some good shots. So we showed the pictures to the officers, and they told us not to come out there at night.
You're like, no problem.
Yeah. Long story short, we never talk about the encounter. I don't like talking about it now. My cousin is a police officer here in town. He was one of the officers who responded that night. To this day, he's still scared to drive up in there at night. So, yes, things you cannot explain are real. Come to Sleepy Hollow, New York. You never know what you might see, Sean.
Oh, Sean, I'd love to come up there.
Oof, except with the knot deer.
I don't want to look at the knot deer, but I like to just come up there.
Yeah, I think I'm good on the whole knot deer thing. Although I do love it, and I don't want to see them. But folks, deer season here in the States is firing up. It kicks off in Florida actually this week or next.
That's crazy.
So it starts down there early, starts moving it up. So all of you out there that are hunters, hikers, fishermen, anybody in the outdoors, if you've got any knot deer sightings or whatnot, fire them this way. We're curious to hear about them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love them.
I got another one for you.
I don't want to see
them. I don't either. I just want to see normal, nice deer.
Large.
At my feeder. Every time I'm out there.
I need large deer that are very slow to react, have bad hearing, and very poor. They can have decent eyesight, but I need them to be nose blind and have bad hearing. And then I'm good to go. Then I got them. That's how I get them.
Check this one out. It says, "Hello, Kyle and Cam.
Howdy.
I'm a big fan of you two and what you do, and your incredibly laid-back way of presenting the strange and the unusual to the world."
I think he likes me better than you.
"I found out about your show about 3 years ago while reading a book on the paranormal journey around the U.S. In the book, the author mentioned a few podcasts out there for anyone interested to go check it out. So I did. And of the other 4 or 5 shows recommended, I liked yours the best."
Oh, thanks.
I remember that book. Do you remember that? Paranormal Journey Around the U.S.?
I know. Kyle can't read that well, so he can remember when I tell him what's in the book. He likes books with pictures.
Says, "Enough brown nosing. I've debated writing down and telling anyone my story for a while now, but I feel it's necessary to get it out there. A few shows back, a person wrote into the show and expressed that they wanted to get their story to get out there before it was too late and before they passed away or something like that. That hit me hard, and I knew right then that I needed to do the same. Now, I don't think I'm dying anytime soon, at least I hope not, but I do think my experience is worth sharing just in case. My experience is a bit hard to talk about. It literally has changed my entire life and has had a huge impact on almost everything in my life in one way or another since the event. This wasn't recent, so let me take you back to when this all took place. My name is Lewis, and I'm from a small town in South Carolina called Whitmire. I was born in 1957. I was part of the baby boomer generation in a small rural area in the deep south. I had the typical childhood from anyone growing up in that era. I was a country boy, so I did the stereotypical things that country boys do. I played a lot of baseball, football, I did some hunting, and I did a whole lot of fishing. I loved to fish, still do. My home was a Christian one, with me and my folks almost never missing a Sunday service. I was raised with a less than open-minded pair of parents. I never, ever heard anyone talk about the paranormal. No ghost stories, no creepy crawlers, and definitely no stories about aliens or UFOs. But one of my friends, when I was around 10 or 11, had some comic books called UFO Flying Saucers. I remember looking at the cool cover art and reading the interesting stories inside, never once thinking that one day I would experience something I would have trouble talking or even thinking about. So it was then that I became really interested in UFOs, aliens, and thinking about the real possibility of otherworldly beings traveling the expanses of space and time to visit us here on Earth. Well, as time went by and I grew up, I thought less and less about the subject altogether. I stopped reading comics and magazines and started chasing girls. Just after finishing high school, I met the love of my life, Jackie. We dated for a while and eventually got married and raised a beautiful family. But my encounter happened before we were married. We had been together around 2 years when the summer was approaching, and we wanted to do some camping and fishing together. You see, I lucked out because Jackie loves fishing too. So she was a welcome companion on many, many fishing trips. So we started looking at some good places to camp and fish for a few days, just the two of us. We did some asking around, and everyone told us that we needed to go check out Croft State Park, just outside Spartanburg, South Carolina. So that's where we decided to go. We packed up the car and headed to Croft State Park to camp and fish for 5 to 7 days. We weren't really sure. The place was great. The surroundings were beautiful, and Lake Craig looked promising. We had a small aluminum John boat with us that we could do some fishing out of, and we were really excited. We selected a campsite, set up all of our stuff, and made ourselves a few sandwiches to eat and take it all in. The spot that we selected was far from anyone else. We hardly saw anyone at the park at all, so we were in heaven. After dinner, we climbed into our tent and went to sleep. We awoke early the next morning and had a fantastic day of fishing. It was the perfect day. Again, as the sun was setting, we cooked some ham and eggs in a skillet and ate dinner. By the time we were finishing up, it was pretty dark outside, and Jackie was commenting on all the beautiful stars in the sky when we both noticed something strange. She saw it first. She said, "Lewis, do you see that orange-looking star up there? Lewis, Lewis." The reason I wasn't answering is that I didn't see it, and I knew it wasn't a star. I don't know how, but I did. Instantly, all of those magazines and comic books from my youth came flooding back into my mind. I knew first that it wasn't a star because the thing was moving around, zigzagging, holding completely still, and then moving again. I told Jackie, "That's not a star, babe." And she said, "Then what is it? A plane, perhaps?" I told her that I didn't know. Of course, I didn't want to tell her this, that secretly, I thought that it might be a flying saucer. I really liked this girl, and I didn't want to ruin things by making her think I was crazy. We watched it for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then it just disappeared. After that, we talked about other stuff for the next 2 or 3 hours, and then turned in for the night. The next day came, and we did some hiking on some of the local trails. Again, it was a great day, and I and Jackie were having just the best time. As the day wound down, we made dinner, a fire, and did some more stargazing. All of a sudden, we saw the same orange orb we saw the previous night. Jackie excitedly said, "Lewis, look! There it is! There it is again! What is that?" I saw it again, too. And again, I told her that I didn't know. All of a sudden, the object stopped moving around and started to grow in size, or at least that's what we originally thought. After watching it for a minute or so, I realized it wasn't growing in size. It was approaching us and our campsite. It was coming towards us. Yeah, this thing descended over Lake Craig and hovered over the surface of the water about 100 feet or so.
Mm-mm.
I have no way of actually knowing the altitude, but there was an old water tower near my house at home, which stands 116 feet tall, and this looked very close to that height. It was about 4 to 5 football length fields in length away from us, and it just sat there. No sound, nothing. It was completely quiet. No crickets or cicadas or anything. Suddenly, Jackie said, "Lewis, is that a flying saucer?" And I just said, "Maybe. I don't know." Well, it sat there for about 2 minutes, and then it shot off into the air very quickly, making absolutely no sound. That was it. It was gone. Surprisingly, Jackie didn't seem frightened by it at all. She was just excited. We talked about it for a while and then went asleep. Around 3 a.m., I woke up in our tent and saw a small glow coming from the outside. I thought maybe our campfire had flamed up again. I tried to ignore it and go back to sleep. I could hear something outside of the tent moving around. Stepping sounds, scurrying sounds. It's hard to describe, but I could tell something was in our campsite. I thought maybe Jackie or me accidentally left some food out and the raccoons were getting into our supplies, so I needed to get my flashlight, put my shoes on, and shoo them all away. So I first found my shoes, put them on, tied them. Then I felt around the dark tent trying to find my flashlight. I eventually found it after looking for a minute or two. I tried to turn it on, but nothing happened. I was confused. I had just put new batteries in it before we left home and came out here. I had used the flashlight earlier that evening with no problem. This was one of those old metal flashlights from the 70s that kind of looked like a lightsaber. You remember those?
I loved those. My granddad had like 3 of them.
Mm-hmm. So I banged on it a few times. That's the way we took care of things back in the day. When it didn't work, you just hit it. I took the batteries out. I put them back in, but nothing. As I was doing all of this, I could still hear multiple things moving around in our camp. Only light, faint sounds, but I could hear it. By this time, Jackie had woke up and said, "Lewis, what the hell are you doing?" I told her that some raccoons or something was in our campsite and that I was trying to get my flashlight to work so I could go scare them off, but that I couldn't get them to work, and so that she should just go back to bed. She reminded me that on the tree by the fire pit, there's a Coleman kerosene lantern. I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'll just use that." So just like that, not really concerned about what was happening, I unzipped the tent and stuck my head out. What I saw changed me forever. The orange glow I saw from inside of the tent that I assumed was our campfire just flaring up was not our fire at all. It was the large orange orb from earlier that night. It was back, and this time, much, much closer. This time, it was only about 50 yards from the tent and only about 15 feet off the ground. Again, it was completely silent, and it was spinning in a counterclockwise motion, but very slowly. The colors were swirling, too. They were all various shades of orange, but they looked to be moving. It kind of looked like videos of the sun's surface, if that makes any sense, but there was no heat. At this point, I was in shock. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I just sat there in awe. That's when something was moving to my left towards the picnic table with our food and all of our supplies. What I thought were raccoons were something completely different. What I saw were 4 to 5 small, thin children with no hair, only slits for mouths, and large black almond-shaped eyes. They appeared to be rummaging through our belongings, but I couldn't understand why these odd-looking kids were out here in the middle of the night, in a remote camping spot, going through our gear. But before I could try and compute what I was seeing, one of them noticed me noticing them. It stopped and produced a wand of some kind, a small thin stick, like a bat baton that a conductor or in an orchestra would use. That's the only way I can describe it. This being moved to me very quickly and put this wand to my forehead. And that was it. White. Like a really bright camera flash. Everything went white. The next thing I remember, Jackie was waking me up on a trail. I was lying in some tall grass and the sun was hot and warm. It was 1:15 in the afternoon. And Jackie was screaming at me to wake up. Wake up. Wake up, she kept yelling. I was coming around and I felt like I was drunk or hungover. Jackie was there with two park rangers and they were offering me some water. I was very confused. I was trying to make sense of what was happening. Jackie was visibly shaken and was happy to see me well, as being really pissed off at me at the same time. She kept yelling at me, Lewis, where the hell did you go? Where did you go? Why did you leave me all alone in our tent? I was like, what are you talking about? I didn't leave.
You were snoring.
Where am I? What is going on? She said, Lewis, you woke up in the middle of the night and told me that some raccoons were messing with our stuff and that you were trying to get the flashlight to work, but it couldn't. I then told you about the kerosene lantern and you told me not to worry about it and to go back to bed, which I did. Problem is, you never came back. I woke up at 6:30 or so and the tent was wide open and unzipped and you were nowhere to be found. I got up, got dressed, and started screaming your name. I thought maybe you went fishing without me, but all of your stuff was still at camp. The lantern was still hanging on the tree by the campfire. The flashlight was still in the tent. I looked for you all around the camp for 3 hours, yelling your name, but I couldn't find you. So I didn't know what to do. I was getting worried. So I went to the park ranger station and told them that you were missing. They told me not to worry, and they began helping me by asking exactly what happened and where we were and all our stuff and all that. As she was telling me this part, the two park rangers were shaking their heads with agreement with her story. They told me that they found me off this trail, roughly a mile and a half from our campsite, face down in the tall grass, that I didn't have any shoes on, and that my shirt was inside out and on backwards. They wanted me to know what kind of drugs did I take, and I told them I didn't take anything. I was just trying to scare away some raccoons, and the next thing I know, I'm here on the trail talking to you guys. Needless to say, we were both freaked out, and I didn't tell Jackie about the giant orange orb or the odd-looking children for about 10 months. I was different once we got back home. Not depressed, but different. After a while, Jackie asked me what was going on with me. Was there something that I wanted to get off my chest? Was there something that was bothering me? And I told her yes. And then I told her everything. She just listened. I don't think she believed me. I don't think she ever did. She just listened. Never judged me, but told me that she thinks I must have had a bad dream and sleepwalked to where they found me in the tall grass. I don't know if she truly believed that, or it freaked her out so bad to consider the possibility that I was taken by some strange extraterrestrial visitors. I don't know. I've tried to speak to her about it a few times over the years, but she always tells me just to stop. My children have tried to talk me into seeing a clinical hypnotherapist to try to recall what happened during my missing time, but I'm too scared to find out. I lived more than 40 years since my strange encounter, and I still don't want to bring up any old memories. I and Jackie are still married. We still live in South Carolina. We live in Charleston right now. We still fish from time to time, but now mostly with my grandchildren. And I can tell you, I still think about that night almost every time. I don't know what to think about the whole thing. Was I a victim? Or was I lucky because I was chosen? Man, I don't really know. But I know that we're not alone. I hope you enjoyed my story as much as I enjoyed the podcast. Take care and keep them coming. Your friend, Lewis.
Lewis.
What a story, bro.
Dude, I wouldn't go in there either and get to find out. Just don't do it. Look, you got grandkids, you're fishing, it's been 40 years. Hey, it's one of those things. I don't
let old dogs lie, right?
I couldn't kick over that rock to find out again.
No.
If you're still good and everything's good now, just keep it good.
But the wand thing, I've seen that in a movie somewhere. I don't remember if it was Communion.
Was it La Viosa? Isn't that what it is? When they Harry Potter in him right in the forehead with that thing? See, that's why you gotta be packing heat when you try to close the distance.
I saw a wand you can buy.
Here we go. Why are you showing me? The cameras aren't on. Why are you trying to show me the size?
I'm telling you a story. I saw this wand you can buy. It looks like something a fairy would use. And you put your debit card in the the star on the end of the wand, and when you tap to pay, it looks like you're just using your wand.
My granddaughter had one when they went on that silly Disney cruise. Yeah.
Crazy.
Total mistake on her family's part.
But they put a wand on his head.
Just ran up and touched him on the forehead. Bink.
Can you imagine coming out of your tent thinking it's Coons, and you're like, what? And then it just runs up and taps you on the head. You're like,
and then you know what my biggest question is, and it's no knock on Lewis. It's not no question of this. It brought up another question for me. How did the park rangers know where he was going to be? They said they found him over a mile from camp.
Yes,
out in some tall grass, face down. How do you just randomly find that?
Maybe they've been looking for hours and just stumbled upon him. I don't know.
But you know what I'm saying is, like, you've looked for whitetail for 3 days and they leave blood and you've still not found
him. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right? So I'm like, how did they just know? We're just going to go look over here for a little bit and then boom. Because the way it sounds is his wife, she looked for 3 hours before she ever went to find the park rangers. And the park rangers are like, hey, everything's cool. You know, the whole deal is at any time that there's a great distance of where you would normally travel in the dark in a strange area from where you're camping, and then they just find you. And it may just be because it's just solid search and rescue work on the park ranger's part. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying it's awful funny that it's a mile and a half away and then they can still find you out of all the directions that they could spend all those hours. You just so happen to stumble across them out there. I'm
maybe
just
there's
like,
an unwritten extraterrestrial drop-off points, like where you leave.
Well, you know all the missing 411 stuff, where they bring in the SARS people and all that. And it's just like
dogs don't want to track none of that.
And then they bring in like some of the military or something, and they seem to know exactly where to go. Right? They're like, oh, we're going to go check on this hill 2 miles from here on the other side, on the other across the creek. You're like, oh. And I also like the fact he got him in with his clothes on inside out and backwards.
Yeah, that's a common thing. Right?
So you're like, dude.
Man.
Dude, yeah. Look, let's take a quick one. I've got one more story I'm going to share with y'all when we wrap this puppy up, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish. Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Okay. Buckle up.
Let me get a drink here of my water.
It's not going to be, I don't know, Lewis's story's got me all.
Doesn't make you want to go camping.
No, absolutely not.
Dude, I'm telling you, when we were way out in the backcountry in Arizona that time.
Well, all the time. So you never really think about it. But I mean, something crazy could have gone
down. I do
think
about it. That's my problem.
Yeah, that is an issue. You try not to think about it. You're laying in there scaring yourself with your beard. Like something's going to get me. Lon sent this over to me. I'm pretty sure he sent it to me because this takes place in Ozona, Texas. All right. This went down in 2015. A woman who just gives her name as the single letter J sent this in to Lon. Said this incident occurred in Ozona, Texas during the summer of 2015. I'd been talking on the phone with my ex-boyfriend, but I fell asleep during the call. I suddenly woke up when I heard him saying, "Baby, please don't do this." I believe I may have broken up with him while I was talking in my sleep. He told me that I'd been saying some ugly things to him. In the middle of our conversation, I heard wings flapping. I then saw a large shadow stop outside my window. The first thing that came to mind was La Lechuza.
What?
I told my ex not to hang up, but I also told him not to say anything. I was scared. I didn't want to explain what was happening. Then, without warning, the shadow disappeared. I started telling my ex what had happened, and as I spoke, I heard a horrible laugh and scratching coming from the ceiling of my room. I tried to yell, but nothing came out. I was frozen with fear. I tried to scream. I tried to get up, but I couldn't move. Somehow, I finally managed to jump off the bed. I ran across the house to the room where my cousin and her daughters were sleeping. I touched my cousin to wake her, and she opened her eyes. I said, "There's a lechuza." She did not understand me and loudly asked, "What?"
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Daughters woke up. And at that moment, the disturbance seemed to move directly above my cousin's room. The girls began crying. I was starting to panic, and none of us knew what to do. My cousin and I decided to call the police. We told them that we had seen someone looking through the window. What would they have thought if we'd said, "We need an officer to get rid of this lechuza?" While we waited, the scratching, laughter, and heavy thuds continued. The sounds were loud and seemed to be getting louder. But literally seconds before we saw the police spotlight outside, everything changed. It all stopped. The officer arrived, but soon left. About 10 minutes after he was gone, the activity returned. We ran to the car and decided to leave. That was the last day I lived with my cousins. Now, goes on that Lon talks about that during this conversation, the witness stated that after the police left, it came back. They saw the shadow. They heard more sounds, all of this stuff. The cousin attempted to record the sounds, but nothing unusual could be heard when the recordings were played back. She also tried to go on. She said, "I'm going to use an old cassette recorder so they'll know this is right. Like, this is the sound." It messed that up too. They said the cassette recorder came out garbled. Everything came out crazy. Now, Jay, it says, according to Jay, her cousin later stayed at a friend's house where the disturbance allegedly manifested again at the friend's house. So this kind of activity started in 2015. Lon said it followed and has continued for 7 years. It followed that group, that family. My question was, the minute the girls woke up, did it feel that, right? We always talk about the kids. Did it like, no, whoop, now they're over here. And now I'm going to go over there. Like, what attached them? What brought it? What was going on? She went to sleep, was saying horrible things. Was it her? Was it lechuza? Was it this crazy witch thing?
So every time a girl left me when I was younger, it was because La Lechuza was telling them to leave me?
No, it was because of you. Yeah, La Lechuza had nothing to do with it unless it was you. I mean, you were the prize that they tried to get rid of.
La La Loser.
La La Loser. Yeah. La La Scumbag. Something like that. At least that's what they thought. La La Don't Want to See You No More. Yeah, that's the way that thing goes. So, yeah, imagine having this happen, and then it tracks you and hangs out with you for 7 years.
No, I can't imagine.
You deal with that, and then nothing.
What did they do to bring it on? You know what I'm saying? Were they, like, jacking with a Ouija board or something?
Or is it something that just follows their family? And it once it gets to a certain age or once, you know, something, yeah. We always talk about people somehow being marked or family's lineage being marked. Maybe that's what this was. So, folks, hope you enjoyed that creepiness. I don't know that I could use the word enjoy. I'm a little shook. The idea of a raccoon casting a spell on me and then I'm a mile and a half from camp is terrible. All I could think of is magical Dwindy.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the Dwindy just whips that out of his pocket and runs over there and taps you on the forehead with it. And then that's it.
It is wild.
It's the fae.
If you got any wild stories you want to share with Cam and I and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the hotline, 888-393-2783. If you'd like a copy of our book, The Glimmer Man, you can go on Amazon. You can find it and all that stuff. If you want autographed copy, then you have to email bigfizzy@expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Right. I'll give you the instructions, and we can autograph the book and send it off to you.
That's right.
Don't forget, if you want to hear more Expanded Perspectives, in fact, we're fixing to take a break. And for Patreon listeners, we're going to continue with an Elite episode.
Yeah. For those of you that want to hear anything about maybe some goblins or some disembodied screams or a couple of park ranger stories, that's coming up right after this episode as we flow into the
Patreon.
To the Patreon.
Yeah. If you'd like to hear that, just head on over to Patreon. Search up Expanded Perspectives Elite. And you can get access to elite episodes that we've been doing for a long, long time. The back catalog's there.
Yep.
You also get ad-free versions of this show. If you don't like ads, look, we get it.
And we're going to have elite videos coming.
And the videos are coming, too. So yep. Go over there and support your favorite show. It helps out a lot. I hope everybody out there has a good week, Cam.
Yeah, sure.
I know it's a super, super hot one.
It has been.
Do you have anything planned for the rest of your week? Or the beginning of next week, whichever.
Well, getting all the stuff done. You don't know what you don't know, right? 100%. And so it's fun to try to learn new stuff, but I'm not even going to bring it up, but Kyle's listened to me rant for the last day or so. And I'm sure for everybody out there that's a lot younger and does all this stuff, they're like, hey, look, that's no big deal. I'm like, yeah, it's really not. I'm sure I could do some stuff pretty easy too that you couldn't do, but I'm trying to figure it out. So right. Once it gets going, it's going to be fun. But yeah, that's it. Is I'm just working on, I got to go check out the new studio. I got to go look at all that this week, make sure we get all that lined out, and then get this stuff going.
You know, some of the hardest things when you're trying to learn something new is like you'll go
my
on
brain.
You'll go on YouTube and you'll fill in the video and they'll be like, do it this way. You're like, okay. Then you watch another video and they're like, no, don't do it this way. Do it this way. You end up being more confused. Luckily, we have friends
that's the
saving grace.
Is I can just call. There's a couple of folks I just call up and be like, look, this is what I'm doing. What have I got going on?
Which is another reason why we never went down this path is because we didn't have the connection. No. That we have now.
And right? I'm not smart enough to know able to discern like you're talking about, because it goes into in-depth, and I don't need in-depth. I need simplicity, right? I need pictures and simplicity. Take my hand, lead me down there, and show me how to do it.
Yeah.
That's all I need.
That's me. I'm simple. Instead of Simple Jack, I'm Simple Kyle.
That's Simple Kyle. Well,
in fact, I got a funny story about my name when we come back with the Expanded Perspectives.
All right, perfect.
Episode.
I love it.
Hope
all
everybody
right.
has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.